On KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, and you are tuning in to Therapy in a Nutshell here on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. I'm really excited about the show that we've got going this morning. I have here in the studio with me, we are live, so if anybody wants to call in or make a comment or ask a question, the phone number here is 530-605-4567. And you don't have to be on the air. You don't have to use your real name or anything like that. You can just ask a question or make a comment. My producer, Jared, will pass it on to us, and we will speak to it. But the person here in the studio with me is someone very special to my heart. Her name, that's going to make me cry. Holy crap. Yeah, I thought we've got Kleenex. Jared gave us toilet paper. We're good. Her name is Jennifer Jazz Shaw. Yes. And I have known Jennifer for quite a long time, and we have a very special story together. But the reason I wanted Jennifer here, and she has agreed to let me do her background, and she has also told me, which I think is really cool, I said, when we were getting ready for the show, I said, how vulnerable do you want to be? How much can I tell? And tell them what you said to me.
I'm an open book.
You're an open book. She said, I could tell anything at all about everything I know about her, and I know a lot about her.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
I know tons. But I want to share with you why Jennifer's here and why we're doing this show. I'm calling this show Refined by Fire. This woman sitting in front of me has literally, not even just figuratively, has literally risen from the ashes to transform her life, to grow, to be an inspiration to anyone and everyone across the board. And I am very blessed to have been a part of her life in a very special way that you're going to find out now. When I'm going to tell you how I first heard about Jennifer. It was in, what year did the fire happen?
2007.
In 2007, Jennifer was in a very bad fire. And she's going to take you through that story, too. But I was reading in the Record Searchlight about this young woman and her daughter who were in a horrendous fire, burned very badly. And as I'm reading this article, I remember sitting at the kitchen table, and I remember Rich was sitting there, and I looked at him and I said, you got to read this article. I'm supposed to help this person. And I had gotten one of those God messages. And when I get a God message, I listen. I tune in and I say, okay, I hear you. In fact, I think I had kind of an argument with God going, I don't know her. How do I get a hold of her? And I kept hearing, you're supposed to help this person. So when I saw what school her daughter went to, I knew that I knew someone who had children at that school. So I called this person and I said, do you know this woman? And the person said, yeah, I know who she is. And I said, well, I'm supposed to talk to her. I need to talk to her. She goes, okay. So she hooked me up with Jen. And I remember calling you and saying, I want to help you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to offer you therapy.
Yeah.
And I remember you saying, well, I can't afford therapy. And I said, no, it's not about money. It's about I am supposed to help you. I want to help you. I'm offering you therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you saying, well, like a session or what? And you told me today what you were thinking when we had this conversation. You never had said this before.
Well, go ahead. You get your go ahead.
No, you say it. I think it's cute.
Well, so I just was like, I just couldn't afford it. And I was worried that I wouldn't be able to do that.
That one session or two sessions.
Yeah, I just wasn't going to cover it. Like, how long can I come and see you?
Yeah. And so
I got like a lot of stuff.
Yeah, she's like, I'm a mess here. And
hot mess.
They're offering me one session. It's like going to be a tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
So the clear message I had gotten, the God message I had gotten, is I needed to offer help to you and your daughter. And I said, no, it's not about a number of sessions. It's not about money.
Right.
I want to help you until you're finished. So that began a journey with the person I didn't even know. And Jen came to therapy for 3 years,
mm-hmm.
you and Hannah,
yes,
her daughter. One of my interns saw Hannah, which mm-hmm. was beautiful,
yeah,
and saw her pro bono, too, which
right.
was cool. But I got to share with all of you, in 34 years of offering pro bono therapy at times to people, and I, for many years, I almost always had at least one pro bono client. Jen is the only person who ever utilized that fully and well. You showed up for every single session, like once a week for 3 years.
Yeah.
You were never late. You were so responsible and so you valued the gift.
Yeah.
And you did incredible work. Incredible work.
Thank you.
And some of her backstory, I'm going to let her tell you right now because she was reminding me of how scared she was to tell me of a real important part. I knew about the fire. I knew that this woman was trying to rise herself up from the ashes. But I remember you sitting in that chair in my office. And tell them what you said to me.
Well, I was really afraid to share. Like you'd shared with me that you had felt that some of my issues probably had more to do with what happened to me prior to the fire, and I hadn't shared all of why I was such a hot mess at that time. And I was terrified to tell the truth that I had been an addict in I'd only been sober when the fire had occurred. I'd only been sober for 2 years. And I was terrified that if you had found out about my past, that you wouldn't want to give me free therapy still. And you said to me, "Wow, Jen, that makes me want to see you even more." And so the beginning of that relationship where I had a person where you looked at me as a human being and didn't judge me for my past, a professional woman who I highly respect.
Oh, thank you.
That said, it's okay, you know, and you were that person that loved me, you know, and that listened to me and didn't judge me. And that was a really a beginning and a turning point for me, not just in the trauma from the fire, but from my a freedom from my past.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. What a blessing.
You can see why she's a special woman to my heart. So in looking at some of what Jen has risen from, before she moved back to Redding, she was down in Southern California. You were homeless.
Yes.
You were addicted.
Yes.
You were lost in drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
You had a daughter that you were trying to keep safe.
Yeah.
And I remember some of the horrendous stories you told me of those times.
Yeah.
And how, and in the second part of the show, Jen's going to go over more of her story and explain to you how she hit bottom and how she began to come around to being, to rising up from the ashes even more. But you had this horrendous thing going. You ended up moving back to Reading, and your beautiful mother, who I think is just an awesome person.
Oh, my gosh.
Sylvia Henry.
Love her. Hi, yeah. Mom. Sorry.
I remember that she and your dad were supportive of you getting back up here. So you moved back up to Reading. Hannah was just little. She was
five.
Yeah. You got a job. You finished paralegal school. You stayed clean and sober. You got involved with AA. You got your own apartment. And
right.
You moved out of your mom's house, and you were just expanding and growing and really stepping into your own. And then this apartment caught on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And Jen and her daughter, Hannah, were trapped in the apartment.
Yeah.
You literally carried Hannah through the flames out of the apartment, and both of you getting burned. And I remember you telling me how you had to stand her up so that you could use both hands to pull the door open.
Right.
And how it took all the skin off your hands and your arms. And it burned Hannah terribly when you had to set her down, but you had no choice. You needed two hands to get you guys out.
Right.
And the fact that there was no secondary exit to the apartment, that you weren't, the way the fire started was you weren't, didn't know that you were told the heater didn't work. It turned,
correct.
It did work, lit the couch on fire. You had no smoke detectors.
Right.
It was just a horrendous thing. You were in the Sacramento Burn Center for months.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. You know, that was 2 years into my sobriety. Well, that was our first apartment. And you know, things were really picking up, you know, in my life.
You were starting to get your life turned around, and then, bam, trial by fire. But it is a huge testimony to your strength. You did not go back to using even when you got burned.
Right.
Which a lot of addicts would have used that as an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
The pain, the losing everything, all of that would have been difficult for anybody.
Right.
But you persevered.
Mm-hmm.
You are one of the strongest women I know. And you have been through so much in your life.
Yeah.
And after that 3 years of therapy we did a long time ago, we just became friends after mm-hmm. that. You didn't need therapy anymore. You were just sailing in uh-huh. the right direction.
I remember when you told me we were done, I'm like, what?
You're like gadgeted.
I think you're okay. Like, but I want to still see you.
So we just became friends after yeah. that. But yeah. you were done.
Yeah.
In this show, Jen's going to tell you how she went from homeless and addicted to this incredible woman that she is today, how she helps youth fire setters, how she works in the community of Reading regarding fire, regarding youth, peer court. You were a paralegal for a very long time. Mm-hmm. You still utilize your legal
right.
expertise
yes.
in the system. You have an incredible story of hope, of perseverance, of trial by fire, mm-hmm. of moving forward even when you don't want to.
Yeah.
Of being a tremendous mom. Even looking back at being a drug addicted, homeless mom with a little kid, you still found your bottom
mm-hmm.
and hit bottom and
yeah.
and rose up from those ashes.
Yeah.
And I wanted Jen on here today because she's got to tell you her story. It's powerful. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, you're just going to hear Jen talk about what her story is and how she's grown. We'll be back in a minute.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
Hello, I'm Carlene Niver, and I would like to personally thank you for your support while we celebrate over 4 years of business at Carlene's Restaurant and Bar. I'm so proud and excited to see our growth with loyal and new guests alike. Those of you who know me know that I love great food, but more importantly, I love to enjoy myself wherever I go. And that's what my dining team and I strive for when you walk into Carlene's. As the weather transitions, don't forget to book our banquet room for any of your upcoming holiday needs. We also offer outside catering for any occasion. Open 7 days a week, 4 p.m. to 9 p.m., 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Happy hour from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., located in downtown Reading on Center Street. A pinch of patience, a dash of kindness, and a spoonful of laughter make for the best dining experience. I look forward to celebrating over 4 years of business with you at Carlene's Restaurant and Bar.
No one plans to visit the emergency room, but when life's accidents happen, you need on-time, first-rate medical attention. Shasta Regional Medical Center, located at 1100 Butte Street in downtown Reading, has the fastest possible transit and admission of emergency patients. We at Shasta Medical Center are dedicated to all patients who need care, regardless of their ability to pay. Shasta Regional Medical Center, delivering patient-centered health care with compassion, dignity, and respect for every patient and their family.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patty, and you're listening to the incredibly beautiful Native American flute music of Randy McGinnis. You can go to randymcginnis.com, Spotify, Pandora, iTunes, Amazon. And what's really, really cool, I'm so excited about it, is tonight at Shasta Arts Council at the city, Old City Hall, upstairs, starting promptly at 7, we're doing a concert. It's Randy McGinnis playing Native American flute. I'm going to be there playing flute with him as well, and didgeridoo. And it's about healing, about going deep within, about looking at yourself and finding that center and that peace. It's going to be such a cool concert. Tickets are only $15 in advance on Eventbrite, $20 at the door. We still have a few seats left, so come join us. It's going to be very good. That's tonight, Saturday night, March 7th. Okay, so Jennifer Jazz is what she goes by, Jazz Sean. I'm trying to call her Jazz. Later after, I've always called her Jennifer, or Jen. She's going to tell you about her story from homeless and addicted to where she is today, which is phenomenal. So have at it.
Okay.
Tell us who you are.
Yeah. Well, the story behind my name really quick. So the jazz part, my mom always actually wanted me to be go by jazz, but it never stuck until I got the job 8 years ago doing what I do now, helping kids. Mm-hmm. I knew it was meant to be because I had to go by my name. My boss is Jennifer Ann, and I'm Jennifer Ann. So it's like, what are we going to do? I'll go by my initials, JS. So that's where jazz came from. But it's part of me being a new creation, you know.
Yeah.
That's it's fun. It really matches my personality too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my history, I know I have to start out by, you know, just thanking God for all the wonderful, you know, people that I've had in my life that have helped me along the way. Growing up, I felt like I was alone in the world and I didn't have that spiritual connection. And I think a lot of people who struggle with alcoholism and addiction, they struggle feeling that they're alone. And for whatever reason, if they've had trauma in their life or raised in adverse, you know, childhood experiences, you know, we feel alone and don't have the coping skills. So we turn to substance to fill the void. And that's just how it starts. And we all have unique stories of things we've been through. And, you know, a lot of stuff is we've brought on ourselves through our addiction or our alcoholism. And then you just pile more trauma on top of that. You know, then we bring kids into the world and then, you know, poses a whole nother set of problems and struggles, you know, and then we have kids being raised in that as well. You know, and I remember when I had struggled with addiction for a lot of years from, you know, the time I was, you know, early teens trying to not feel my feelings and, you know, through some family stuff that had gone on and, you know, life stuff and not having the tools to deal with it just one drug leading to the next. You know, and the tolerance comes and then you try something a little bit more harder to not feel. And that's how that starts. And it's just kind of a revolving door from there. I remember when I got pregnant with my daughter and it's like, what am I going to do? You know? And a friend convinced me that, you know, you're going to have her and you're going to be okay. And I'm going to help you. You know, somebody reached their hand out to me and, I remember when she was born and, you know, I felt like I'm not going to be alone anymore in the world, you know, and I wasn't ready to get sober. I started to use again right away and I drug her around that world for a couple of years, you know, and I remember, you know, losing places to live and getting evicted and living in places where we didn't have furniture and so at some points, you know, no water and, you know, things that you would get your kids taken away for. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just not, you know, any way to have a child. And I remember my mom, you know, being there for me. And of course I didn't appreciate it at the time because I thought, you know, she's the one, you know, it's all her fault, right? Yeah. You know, we think that we like to blame others when we're in our addiction. But she would always help me and always be there for me. And no matter what, she was always there. My mom was, you know, and I remember her to this day telling stories about, you know, I couldn't find you. I never knew where you were. She lived here in Shasta and I was living in Southern California and she would fly down and she would find me every time, you know, and she would try to help. And I just wasn't ready and I wasn't willing. She never gave up on me, you know, I'm so grateful for that. But there was times I remember being homeless in my car, you know, mm-hmm. taking my daughter to the park to get her washed up before school, you know. It's the things that we do when we're in our addiction and we just can't get it straightened out yet. But God had plans for me, you know. And one last time my mom said, come live with me in Shasta. Come on, Jen, get up here, you know. So I did. I came up with my daughter and my car and everything I could fit in it and we mm-hmm. came to Shasta. And I stayed with her and it was just, you know, I was detoxing and it was really an awful scene. And she had a family intervention for me and the gal that was running the Empire Recovery came to my house and we sat around my table and I was so mad. Wow. You know, I was so angry. I just could not believe it. You know, I was just, I'm sober. I'm already sober. You guys, what are you talking about? I'm not a drug addict, you know. And it was just the lady gave me a card and said, you know, you're not ready. Give me a call when you're ready. And I'm like, whatever. Uh-huh. You know, and
you had no idea you were in a dry drunk.
Totally. Well, one minute I'm crying hysterically. You know, you can't even understand me. It's not even audible what I'm saying. And then the next minute I'm angry. You know, just the emotions are all over the board, you know. And I remember after everyone went home that night, I laid there and cried and just laid for 12 hours, cried, you know, from my guts. Mm-hmm. God cracked my heart open. There's no doubt in my mind that that was one of those turning points, you know, and it was like all my stuff was out there, you know, I was just cried and cried. And I remember Hannah standing over me and looking down at me, and she says, "Grandma, we have to take Mom to the hospital. She has a broken heart."
Yeah.
You know, and
she was just tiny.
She was just little. Like, that was going to help me, you know, take her home. Something's wrong. Mom's crying, you know. And that morning I decided the next morning I could get sober, and I went to detox at the Empire Recovery Center, you know, and I started my journey in recovery, and I was sober 2 years. But then I wanted to drink, you know, and here, this speaks to anybody that thinks that, you know, if they've been addicted or have a drug or alcohol problem, that you can use substance. And this just proved to me that I could not.
Right. Change substances doesn't work.
I functionally drank for a few years, mm-hmm. and then the obsession to drink got pretty strong as well. Mm-hmm. So I eventually made it to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and through this experience, the fire had happened as well. So it was a journey, quite a journey. 2 years into my sobriety, it was September 24th, 2007. Her and I, my first apartment after being sober, clean and sober, 4 o'clock in the morning, she was asleep in the bed with me. And I woke up to some really noisy things happening in the apartment. It sounded like the swamp cooler, because it was a swamp cooler that was on the ceiling. It was on the roof, and it came mm-hmm. through the hall. The vent did. It sounded like that was on fire, and the gears were grinding, and it woke me up. And I got up and looked out in the apartment, and it was just lit up like the lights were on. But I never saw any flames, but I knew that the apartment was on fire and that we had to get out. And so I went back, and I got Hannah, and I grabbed her and carried her to the front door, and I set her down by the front door, and she's hopping around. I'm like, "What are you doing? Where are you going?" And she says, "It's hot, it's hot." And I went to unlock the door, and I just didn't realize what was going on. I knew that we had to get out. I knew the apartment was on fire, but my mind blocked the flames out. I think it was my fight or flight, you know, mm-hmm. our brain, you know.
Adrenaline.
That was my survival to get my daughter and myself out of the apartment. So I opened the front door, and we stepped out, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, my feet are killing me." And I looked down, and all the skin off of both of my feet was just hanging off. It was just left off, and we were both really badly burned. And I carried her to the neighbor's house down the hallway, and we went in there and waited for the fire department to come. And I remember the first few seconds out of that apartment, when I opened the door, the oxygen came into the apartment, and so it just blew up, you know, it fed the fire. And so at that point, you know, the windows were blowing out. The swamp cooler came through the ceiling. You hear this big boom, and things, it's just exploding, and the apartment is just coming to pieces now. Mm-hmm. And I look back, and I could see the flames for the first time, and my daughter was screaming, "Oh my gosh." And I was like, "Hannah, it's okay. We made it. We're going to be okay, you know." And we wait for the fire department to come. And getting out, that was one thing, but our journey was just beginning.
Yes.
You know, just beginning.
The pictures of you and Hannah all wrapped in gauze down in the burn unit in Sacramento are profound.
Yeah. Yes. And the thing that was so difficult for me as a mom, you know, was that I couldn't be there for her.
She was in the children's burn unit across the street from the burn unit you were in. I remember that.
When we were in the ambulance together at the apartment, they said, "Jennifer, your burns are too bad. We have to get you in your own ambulance. We have to take Hannah and put her in her own because we need to work on you." And I remember telling Hannah, "Okay, sweetie, it's going to be okay. Like, you're going to be okay. We're going to be separate. I'm going to see you again, but we're going to have to separate right now." And she's, "Okay, Mom." And from then on, I didn't see her again for 2 weeks. We would talk on the phone, but we were flown down in separate helicopters. We were in separate hospitals. And I didn't want her to be alone. And so anybody that came to visit us, my mom, family, I said, "Please just be with Hannah because she cannot be alone through this. I can't be there for her. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to do my own. Well, I have to be over here." And the part about burns is the debriding. You know, yeah. we're lucky to make it, first of all, out of there. I had burns around my mouth, and so I was intubated. And usually it's very rare that somebody that's intubated from burns, from inhaling heat, survives that alone, just that in itself. And so they were really concerned about me. And how we were going to do, how I was going to do. And so, but the burn debriding is the most horrible thing that you could ever imagine.
The burn victims I've dealt with in therapy, the debriding is a huge trauma all in alone in of itself.
Yeah.
We have to go to break. Jen's going to continue her story when we come back. So we'll be back in just a minute. Don't lose your place.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004. But our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
It's time to glow at the Redding Rancheria Community Fund 2020 Year to Remember. Saturday, March 7th at the Wind River Resort and Casino Event Center. Since the inception of the fund in 2002, it has granted approximately $3.4 million to the local area. So come join us in celebrating the 71 organizations that the Redding Rancheria has been able to help with a surprise gift of $10,000. All proceeds from this event benefit the Redding Rancheria Community Fund, furthering the help the Community Fund does for our area. So come experience firsthand all the good the Community Fund does and support the tribe.
No one plans to visit the emergency room, but when life's accidents happen, you need on-time, first-rate medical attention. Shasta Regional Medical Center, located at 1100 Butte Street in downtown Redding, has the fastest possible transit and admission of emergency patients. We at Shasta Medical Center are dedicated to all patients who need care, regardless of their ability to pay. Shasta Regional Medical Center, delivering patient-centered health care with compassion, dignity, and respect for every patient and their family.
SST Oil on Windham Lane in Redding, your source for specialty fuels and oils, including kerosene and low-sulfur fuel oil. They feature Toyotomi heating systems and on-demand water heaters. Save $100 on a new Toyotomi home water heater and ask about special savings for residents affected by the car fire. Locally owned SST Oil, supporting the community through summer fires and winter snows. Stay warm and cozy with Toyotomi and SST Oil. 241-1167. 241-1167.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patty with special guest Jennifer Jazz Shaw, who just left off in her story about the house fire she and Hannah were in. She was just talking about the hospital experience and mentioned the word debriding, which is a very traumatic experience for burn victims. What I've seen in therapy over the years, they have to deal with the debriding all themselves. Can you just briefly tell the audience what debriding is, Jen?
Sure. Excuse me. Yeah, so debriding is the cleaning of the burns. It has to occur twice a day. Burn treatment is – burns are so dangerous. That type of injury is one of the most dangerous injuries to heal from and overcome. There's so many different ways somebody can die. Succumb, yeah, from a burn. You know, there's just – it's just such a trauma.
Shocking. It's to the heart, to the lungs.
It is.
To shock, to infection.
Yeah, infection,
to
exactly.
Dehydration. You can't hold your fluids in anymore.
Right,
It's a very traumatic experience to the body.
It but just really,
debriding is basically where they take a brush.
Yes.
And they
scrub
your burned skin twice a day to get the burned, dying skin off of you, to get down to... And let new skin form in
correct.
Here.
Yes.
So, okay. So
and that happens twice a day. So not only are they scrubbing it, they bandage you up, and then they dry to your burns.
And then pull
and
the bandages
them off.
Off.
And that's not even to talk about people who have to have the grafting. Hannah and I were fortunate enough not to have to have grafting. That's a whole nother level of burn care and treatment, which is very awful as well. But yes, so...
So after the fire and after the burns and you're down in Sacramento Burn Center, both of you, her in the children's hospital across the street from you, you weren't even in the same room with your daughter.
Right.
So it was very traumatic for both of you. But eventually you were allowed to come home. Tell us how you adjusted to being a burn victim. How did you go from burn victim to burn survivor?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you that our story was pretty impactful for the trauma center at Mercy. The nurse, the trauma nurse there, I wound up being able to contact her years later. The nurses at UC Davis and Shriners Hospital also, because it was the mom and daughter burn victim story, right. and now that we were making it and that they didn't know if we were going to make it and that we were pulling through. There's just so many different levels of burns. You know, you go through the burn treatment, and then when you're able to come home, you know, when I was in the hospital, I had to learn how to walk again. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if I was going to wear heels. I love heels. I love to dress up, you know, and I'm like, I had this favorite pair of red heels that I lost them in the fire too, but it's like, am I ever going to wear red heels? But I remember calling my mom, you know, I had to walk with a walker in the hospital. And I remember the first day I walked, calling my mom and say, Mom, I walked today. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just one little baby step at a time. And same for Hannah, you know, there was a time that she was, you know, had to get an orderly to come pick her up off the floor because she had full surface burns on her skin, on her feet too. So, mm-hmm. you know, falling down and, you know, wearing, you know, you have to wear burn garments mm-hmm. for all the scars, you know, and not knowing what you're going to look like after the healing process happens. I was really worried about how I was going to look. You know, I had 11% burns over my body and Hannah as well. It's all my arms, you know, forearms, lower arms, back of my arms, my back, my face. You know, we had burns everywhere. And mm-hmm. so we just didn't know what we were going to look like wearing those burn garments. It took a year to get those burns to heal all the way. And then the healing process continues, you know, as years go by. And so for years I was ashamed to wear a tank top.
Anything that showed your burns.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, you hid them.
Yes. And I remember going to one of your retreats.
On the weekend intensive workshops. Yes. Yeah, that's right.
And that was a turning point for me, you know, going through that weekend and coming to the point where, you know, you told me, those are your battle scars. But that's your armor, you
it's
know.
It's your like, badge of honor.
It's your badge, you know. Yeah. You can wear them. You're beautiful and walk me through that. And so then I was able to start wearing the tank tops and showing my burns and coming out of that and not worrying so much about what we looked like.
And wearing them with pride. And if anybody asked you what happened to your arms, you just told them.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, if everybody that knows me knows I don't particularly like tattoos. I think they're unnecessary. But you are probably the only person in the whole world that when you got a tattoo, I went, yeah. Because you have a tattoo on your right arm.
Yes.
That goes down over all those scars on your right arm. Mm-hmm. That's just a phoenix. Uh-huh. Stepping into your burns. And when you got that, I remember just going, yeah, there it is. That's the reason for tattoos.
Right, exactly. Yes.
And you have so embraced moving forward with this incredible journey that you had and coming out of survivor. And I don't even mean to make it sound easy.
Mm-hmm.
You had tremendous ups and downs, but through it all, you didn't use. Mm-hmm. You didn't go back to drugs and alcohol.
Right.
You kept work. You finished your paralegal degree. You got a job as a paralegal. And then go into the next part of your journey, too, because
sure.
this is really cool. You not only became a burn survivor, but you began to work with youth. And mm-hmm. talk about this for a little bit.
Sure.
What you've done with your mm-hmm. your history.
Well, you know, again, I give the glory to God because, you know, the people that I met, the doors that open, you know, and we talk about in recovery, it's the willingness. If you have a willingness, anything is possible as long as you're willing, you mm-hmm. know, and take the help and take a look at ourselves. You know, that's the most important thing is that we take a look inside, you know, mm-hmm. and we look at our own behavior. And so I was given the opportunity through a friend that I had met who had known about a job that was at youth, it was formerly Youth Violence Prevention Council. Mm-hmm. We're now Youth Option Shasta. Mm-hmm. We changed our name to make it a little bit more simple.
Yeah.
Everyone would say youth violence. I'm like, no, it's not that.
It's about not
having
youth
violence. Yeah. So we were Youth Option Shasta. But the job that was came open, the Overseas Chastities Peer Court, and that is a diversion program for juvenile probation. We get direct referrals from schools as well for youth who have, you know, first time or second time offenses. Mm-hmm. It diverts them out of the juvenile justice system, but they go to a youth court where they have a case heard by a jury of their peers. Mm-hmm. And so it's that positive pro-social peer pressure. You know, we have jurors who are volunteers, and we have kids that have been sentenced to do jury duty as part of their case. And so they get together and they help the next person coming through. And then they're given classes to learn better behavior. And once they finish their program, then their case is dismissed. And right. So they don't have a record. But, you know, it was like a no-brainer when I went to the job interview and I was sitting with Jennifer Richards, who's the program manager. She, you know, I'm telling her, oh, this is my job. You know, I can I just start right now because yeah. I could just stay, you know, yeah. finish the day out today because this is my job. And she's like, well, I have to talk to my director first. And it was just such a no brainer with my history. And
perfect for you.
I'm in the I'm in the legal field and it's with at risk kids. And so, I started my journey with that job and I've been there 8 years. And so we're helping kids, you know, we're saving the world one kid at a time.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you started doing, working with youth fire setters?
Yes. So in the peer court, I started at Youth Options in 2012. And in 2014, we had 6 youth that had fire incidents. Mm-hmm. They were accidental fires, nothing that was malicious. And they had, you know, a couple acres they'd burned up because they were doing some kind of science project in the woods or they were playing with matches. It mm-hmm. was not malicious. So it went through diversion. But for me, you know, as a burn survivor and going through with what I did with Hannah being a burn survivor, my daughter who's 8, you know, I never want to see another child have to go through debriding. I personally know what that's like. Mm-hmm. And I know what it's like to have a child that has to have gone through that as well. So it was a call to action.
Yeah.
You know, I need to be able to give them this information. And so I contacted Patrick O'Connor who works at the City of Reading Fire Department, and we put a program together to educate the family. So we had the parents come. So the first year we had 6 youth that went through peer court and that did our little education that we kind of came up with ourselves. I gave my story. He talked to them about the fire.
Anti-fire education.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yes. And that's what now is what we call the Youth Fire Academy. Mm-hmm. Which is a 2-day education for age appropriate for kids. And so since 2014, we got training from mm-hmm. FEMA, special training how to assess kids for future fire risk. Mm-hmm. We've brought in other agencies, partnered with Cal Fire. I'm a member of the Shasta Arson Task Force, so that has members from all fire jurisdictions in Shasta County, so there's several of us on that. And they all refer the kids that they come into contact with that have fire setting issues. So since the program inception, I've assessed over 200 youth fire setters. I've also assessed kids that are in custody. So the fire setters that have had malicious fires, I also assess them as well to help in their treatment and to determine what their risk level is mm-hmm. for future fire setting so we can get them the assistance that they need.
One of the things I love about your story is you've gone from addicted and homeless and a victim mentality back
right.
then to rising up from that, getting clean and sober, finishing your paralegal degree, getting a work and job, moving
right.
into your own place. It burns down, burns you and your daughter tremendously. You get into therapy. You worked harder in therapy than just about anybody I've seen in 34 years. Really good mom. You're a lovely daughter and a wonderful friend. You are this incredibly beautiful person.
Thank you.
You work with Al-Anon and AA,
yes.
and you are a sponsor for other
yes.
addicts.
Mm-hmm.
You work with fire prevention. You work with youth peer court.
Yes.
You have come such an incredibly far way, Jen, that is beautiful and guided and doors flew open for you mm-hmm. to help people, which has just been phenomenal.
Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
We've got to go to break. And this is one of those shows that we could go on 3 or 4 shows with and take a section out of your life. We may come back and do a show on addiction at some
okay.
point, too, because
mm-hmm.
you have so much to say mm-hmm. about when you hit bottom, what that was like for you.
Right.
You have so much to say about your youth programs that you do for peer court and for fire prevention. So we're going to go to break. We have to.
Okay.
It's mandatory. And when we come back, I'm going to let you finish telling your story and tell them about something exciting that you're working on now that's beyond all this other stuff,
yeah,
which is just really cool. So
okay.
We're going to go to break, and we'll come back in a minute, and Jen's going to tell you some more really cool stuff.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
The value of banking local comes in being able to walk into the lobby, see the president, and be called by your first name, knowing that lending decisions are made locally by people you call neighbor or serve alongside when supporting a worthy cause. There's confidence in knowing that when you place your trust in Cornerstone Community Bank, you not only help yourself, you support the town you call home. Stop by one of our Reading or Red Bluff branches or visit us online at bankcornerstone.com. Cornerstone Community Bank. We invite you to experience how we are moving local dreams forward.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patty. Join us tonight, Chef's Arts Council, second floor of Old City Hall in downtown Reading. 7 o'clock, starting promptly on time, so get there a little bit early, for an incredible concert with Randy McGinnis, Native American flutist, and myself playing flute and didgeridoo. And doing a really cool healing concert tonight. Join us. Okay, I'm here with Jennifer Jazz Shaw. And she's talking about her journey from down and out to this incredible woman that's sitting here before me that I can tell you I truly love. I do love you. I know that forever. Anyways, go on. Tell us more about your story.
Well, I first want to open with this. Shortly after the fire, I went to a day healing. My mom had taken me to her church, and there was a meditation that my daughter and I did together. It was a Native American flute, and mm-hmm. I had my daughter sitting in my lap, and we just had her eyes closed. One of the few times that she was able to sit still, real still, so it was it was good, you know, because she was young. She was only, you know, at that time she was 8. Mm-hmm. So I'm holding her on my lap, and there's the flutes playing, and I hear God say to me, "Jennifer, I saved your life. You better start living it." Mm-hmm. And I've never heard God audibly, you know, but it was in a different, there's just no doubt in my mind that was another turning point. Mm-hmm. And I realized, I the thing with addiction and alcoholism is that victim mentality that you mentioned, and, you know, being the, you know, poor me thing and whatever it is that keeps us in that place. But I believe that for the first half of my life, I was taken from the world. And I promised from that point on that I would spend the rest of my life giving back to it.
And that's what you do beautifully.
And if service is what we talk about in recovery, to be of service and to carry the message to the next person, and to be that safe place, you know, and to walk alongside somebody. and not judge them.
Mm-hmm. When we talk, and I know this because I know you, but I asked you to put into words, what are the things that you would say helped you in recovery besides hitting bottom? And your hitting bottom story is profound. Mm-hmm. I mean, between jail and busted and possibly losing Hannah and all sorts of stuff, and your bottom is pretty profound. But I remember you said to me, the things that helped you come to who you are today are your faith and your belief in God.
Mm-hmm.
AA. Mm-hmm. AA, NA, Al-Anon, the whole program and the 12 steps.
Yeah.
Being in therapy.
Yes.
Getting into physical fitness.
Mm-hmm.
And taking care of your body instead of harming it.
Right, exactly.
And the mentors that you have, the powerful people in your life who believe in you, love you, a tribe of people that don't judge you, hold you up, hold you accountable, hold your...
Tell me the truth.
This is probably a bad thing to say to you, but hold your feet to the fire.
Exactly. Yeah.
In a good way.
Yes. Yes.
Not to slough your skin off, anyway. And you furthering your education and putting yourself into a position of helping others, mm-hmm. and then fully embracing that and stepping into it.
Yeah.
Your story of resilience and faith and growing and walking your truth is so profound. It's the main reason I wanted you to be on here today. Not just because I love you and I wanted to share something cool with you. I wanted the world to hear Jennifer Jazz Shaw and what you bring. It's pretty profound.
Thank you. I'm so grateful.
Talk to us about your journey into physical fitness, because it's part of your recovery, and it's not that you're some kind of exercise addict or something like that, but you have transformed yourself physically by embracing a whole different type of world.
Yes.
Talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
And what's coming up for you that's exciting.
Okay, yeah. So the organization that I work for, Youth Options Shasta, we're a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's always who's going to have the next best fundraiser that's going to bring the money in that we need to keep operating the programs that we have. We're grant funded, and, you know, we fundraise, basically. We do have contracts with different agencies that give us money as well. But, you know, it's always how we're going to keep afloat.
To scramble for the funds.
It really is. And so my director, Jennifer Richards, my executive director, Susan Wilson, allowed Jennifer Richards to put into to play her idea about having a mud run. And so we partnered with – I'm going to share our sponsors. Is that okay?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Absolutely. I can't say with that because we haven't done this alone.
Yeah.
So Eddie Axner Construction has stepped in, and he builds all of our obstacles for a Shasta mud run.
Cool.
And then Ty Boss with Outlander Creative does all of our marketing. And we partnered with Everyday Fitness, a great gym, my family gym, my workout family that I have there. We put this event together with lots of other volunteers who are amazing. We could not do this alone. I never want to talk about our successes without mentioning the people who have helped us do it, because we've had a lot of help and we're so grateful. But we have our Shasta Mud Run, which is our biggest fundraiser. It's annually. It's coming up on May 9th. We just moved it to Haas Farms, so it's a lot of work we're putting in to move it. It used to be at Ross Ranch, but this year it's at Haas Farms. But it really inspired me to get fit. And the stories that I know, because I work there, you know, we manage all the marketing and the Facebook, and the stories that we get back and the feedback from the people who have done the event is as much like mine, where you think a mud run, a tough mudder, there's no way I could do that. That's like too hard. There's just no way. I'm not physically fit enough to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear the stories of the five generations of one family that have come out, and they conquered it. They did it. They finished. And it set new fitness goals for them. And we all know, I could speak for myself, but the journey into staying fit and eating right, and it's just a constant negotiation in your mind, right?
Much like sobriety.
Exactly. I mean, you just
what choice are you going to make today?
Justify the, you know, whatever you know you got. So staying determined to stay healthy and eat good and exercise is just a constant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of that event that I was inspired to get fit. You know, after when I got sober and after the fire, you know, you eat. That's the thing that I turn to. I love sugar. And cake is the big joke. All my friends will laugh because
call you
I love
Walela,
cake.
Which is Cherokee for hummingbird. Okay. Walela.
Yeah, so getting fit and staying fit and just having a tribe of support around to like you said, hold you accountable, tell you the truth, mm-hmm. but love on you a heck of a lot, not judge you, not tell you what you need to do, but maybe suggest in a kind way what you might think about doing, and always, always, always pray.
Yeah.
Pray. Bring it to God.
When in doubt, shut up and pray.
It's not going to be the next human that can tell you what to do, but pray. Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
So if someone wants to be part of the Shasta Mud Run,
yes,
can anybody do it? Or does it have to be only the youth option people?
No.
Okay, so anyone can do it.
Yes.
How do they find out about it? Where do they sign up? Is there a Facebook page on it?
Yes.
What is available?
Yes. So our Facebook page is ShastaMudRun.com.
Okay.
Just Google
that's
it.
Your
Shasta
website.
Yeah, that's our website, and we have youth options too. And our nonprofit is not a faith-based organization. I just have to put that out there.
Yeah.
I'm sharing my personal story here of talking about God. I don't want to get anyone confused about that organization.
Just like AA, anyone is welcome.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So, so our organization is Youth Option Shasta. We take donations. We love volunteers. We love support. But yeah, the Shasta Mud Run's coming up May 9th. So mm-hmm.
And can people just come out and watch it if they don't
absolutely.
Want to get muddy?
Yes, they can. They absolutely can. And then we have a free kid mud pit area.
Oh, so like your three-year-old can come play in the mud?
Yeah, and it's like roped off. It's in a little fenced area, and they get to play and have a good time. And it's for all skill levels.
I may have to bring my grandkids out there to play in the mud. They would like that. I don't
yes.
know how their mothers would like that, but
yeah, no,
I could hose them down before I put them back in the car.
We have hoses, and we give them buckets, and there's lots of washcloths and stuff to get clean with. So I don't know how clean you can get, but they do have a good time.
Yeah, I toss them in the back of the Subaru. It's like the dog's back there sometimes. That's good.
Yeah.
So Shasta Mud Run is a way to have fun. Support Shasta Options and youth.
Peer court,
youth changing violent offenders,
youth
who are in diversion, youth who've set fires, youth who we don't want to set any more fires.
Exactly.
Youth at risk.
Right.
What we're
we have
about.
A mentorship program. We got a lovely woman that's overseeing our mentorship. That's the one-on-one for a year obligation. Sorry. It's the mentoring they get partnered with somebody that has like.
So if you're looking for someplace to volunteer and you are a good, solid adult who loves children, loves teenagers, it's almost like a Big Brother, Big Sister program where you can mentor a child that they match you with.
Right.
So I know that there are people out there that are looking for places to make a difference
mm-hmm.
and to not be so overbooked in volunteering that they take on another full-time job.
Right.
So you can contact Jennifer. You can call Shasta Options.
Youth Options, yes.
Youth Options. You can get on your web page mm-hmm. and say, I'd like to hear more about your mentoring program.
Absolutely. And the obligation. The opportunity is, that's my favorite word, is just once a month for an hour, 4 hours a month, or mm-hmm. once a week for an hour, however they want to split that up. But we do ask for a year commitment. So. Research shows that you can change lives by mentoring. It takes just one person outside the family, much like you, Patty, in my life, that helped me helped you loved me until I could love myself.
Mm-hmm.
That's why recovery works too, because we love people until they can love themselves.
I actually talk about that in my book. That even if you come from a really traumatized, difficult family, it can take one coach, one therapist, one teacher, one big brother, big sister. One mentor, one solid person in your life that loves you unconditionally
mm-hmm.
that can help change your life.
Absolutely.
And help you rise out of the ashes.
Yes. Yep.
Jen has so much to say. I think what we're going to do is maybe in a few weeks we'll do a show on addiction.
Okay.
And let you tell your entire story. I think your bottom that you hit is profound, and your call to consciousness was profound.
Yeah.
And I'd love for them to hear more about your own testimony and your work with AA
mm-hmm.
and your sponsorship, all that you do.
Mm-hmm.
You are a gift to this mm-hmm. world, Jennifer Shaw.
Thank you.
And I adore you. And I admire you. And I have such deep respect for you.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for coming on the show today and in such a vulnerable, open way, sharing your heart and who you are. Because you're pretty darn special. So I just want to say to everybody, thank you so much
mm-hmm.
for joining us today on Refined by Fire. Jennifer Jazz Shaw, this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and you've been listening to Therapy in a Nutshell, where I'm just trying to heal the world 1 hour at a time.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.